Okay. So I'll begin with just a few thoughts about yesterday's events and then proceed to my Dvar Torah about the Parsha. Whether you voted for Trump or Biden, it really doesn't make any difference to my mind. What took place yesterday was deplorable, reprehensible. It was just an unimaginable assault on what is, if you'll pardon the metaphor, a temple of democracy. And in many ways, it was a sacrilegious act. Obviously, lahavdil elef havdalos, Capitol Hill does not have the kedusha or any kedusha like the Beis Hamikdash. But in our political life, I would say that Capitol Hill functions as a kind of a temple, and its desecration was absolutely shocking. I was looking at images on my computer screen, as all of you were, I'm sure, or television or whatever, and it was just unfathomably disturbing to me and to all of us. I've been there, like I'm sure most of you have. And vivid memories of the architecture and of the dignified surroundings and the wooden panel and the artwork and so much of great importance to American life happens in Capitol Hill, which is obviously not to say that all or most of those who work there are noble people, but noble or not, that is where our democracy functions. And it was really a sacrilegious, terrifying act. United States has been a very welcome home to Jews. We've sought refuge here from pogroms, from the Holocaust, from persecution going back further than that. And it's been a country that is a country of laws, a country that welcomes minorities, and it's been a country that has been a model for many, many other countries around the world. And I know I myself took it for granted. I mean, in a way, what I mean to say is I took the stability of the country for granted. I think many of us did, whatever craziness might go on in the political world, but it is a kind of a fundamental assumption of our lives, political lives, social lives, psychological lives, that the United States is a fortress and it will survive and democracy will always flourish. And what struck me, amongst many other feelings, I have many, many feelings about this, but I want to focus on one in particular. I was just so struck by what I came to understand to be the fragility of the country which houses us and has welcomed us and welcomed me and is my home. It's been my home since I was born. Parents were born in this country. I'm reminded of a famous comment that Thomas Jefferson made. The price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And we can't take for granted the freedoms that are at the woof and warp of our country. I kind of always took American democracy for granted. We may have good presidents, bad presidents, good senators, bad senators, good representatives, bad representatives, but our democratic lives, our freedoms will always remain stable. And I was just really disturbed in looking at those images of smashing windows and scaling walls and the refuse and the yelling and the screaming. And they've discovered, as I'm sure you all know, explosives inside Capitol Hill. It's just words can't describe how disturbing that is, and how it forces me to fully confront how fragile the life is of any country, including the United States of America. I can't help but be reminded of the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Hevi Mispalo b'Shlomo Shel Malchus. You should daven for the peace of the kingdom in which you live. Shel Mole Mora, Ish Es Re'ehu Chayim below. Because were it not for fear of government, people would swallow up one another. Which reminds me, as a student of philosophy, of Thomas Hobbes, who taught that without government, without a powerful government, society would fall into a war of all against all. As he said famously, life would be solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. And looking at the wild crowds that just climbed up the walls and smashed the windows and tried to get entree, and the pictures of the senators and representatives ducking and hiding, and four people killed. I mean, it's just a horrifying confirmation of the teaching of that Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. And while this is primarily a tragedy for our entire country, as Jews, I think we need to be especially concerned, because Jewish history teaches us that when there is political instability and violence, somehow or other, Jews get implicated and blamed. That's been the case through revolution after revolution, through political turmoil after political turmoil, and country after country. When there is fundamental instability, of course, Germany is a terrifying example of that, but there are many, many, many examples throughout history. When there is instability, when there is violence, and somehow the Jews get blamed. And while I'm not one of those people who says, let's get a passport and get ready to leave, it's always good to make aliyah, but what transpired is worrisome, primarily for the country as a whole, but for any minority within the United States, and especially the Jewish community. You know, I'm sure you follow this. We all kind of shet nachas at the reports of one cabinet minister after another cabinet minister being Jewish. And so many of Biden's appointees, just today, the Attorney General has announced another Jewish person, Secretary of State, another Jewish person, Chief of Staff. I mean, after one person after another. And we shep nachas, and, you know, Baruch Hashem, look how the Jewish community has, members of the Jewish community have been elevated to the highest positions. But there's some little part of my neshama that says, this is not necessarily the best thing in the world. Because again, we know from Jewish history that if we're too prominent and bad things happen, then sometimes the Jews get blamed. Again, I'm not raising any alarms. I'm not saying we should all leave the country. I don't think that's the case at all. But it is worrisome, primarily for the whole country. I don't mean, this is not a Jewish thing. This is an American thing. But nevertheless, my historical memory always perks up at these events. It seems to me that this is a time of cheshbon ha-nefesh for our country. How did we get to a place where reprehensible, violent mob could attack Capitol Hill? Like, how did we get to this place? And seems to me that many, many people need to do a cheshbon ha-nefesh in politics, in the media, social media. I'm not going to point my fingers. That's not my aim in this particular talk right now. You know, we all have our views about that, and I have my views too, but I don't want to focus on that. I think in general, we as a society as a whole, including our politicians and our people in the media, should look at ourselves and figure out, like, where did this come from? And we should take responsibility. And this, I find, there's so much that's been disturbing, but this I find to me to be particularly disturbing is that there's very little of that going on. I mean, if you read the releases and the reports, it's basically people blaming somebody else. It's like nobody is taking any risk, or I shouldn't say nobody, very few people are taking any responsibility for the role they might have played in the terrifying events that overtook us yesterday. The left blames the right. The right blames Antifa. And again, I'm not going to get into what's true, what's not true. My point is not to assess the validity of any claims or to pick out individuals, although one certainly might want to do that in different contexts. That's not my context here. But what troubles me is that the finger is always pointing there. It's like somebody else. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. But the fact is that all political leaders, all media, and all citizens of the United States of America have contributed to an environment where violence like that, horrifying violence, sacrilegious violence, is possible. And there should be more pointing of fingers within. Like, what is it about us, about our society, that has fractured in such an unthinkable and shocking way? I always think of the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos I've mentioned many, many, many times, Rabbi Akiva's teaching, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tselem. Human beings are precious because they're created in the image of Hashem. And I think that there is so much dehumanizing across the social spectrum and political spectrum of people with whom we disagree that the people with whom we disagree are not human. They're terrible, they're awful, they're horrible. They're unacceptable. I can't even talk to them. And that happens across the spectrum. It's true of people on the right who regard people on the left as subhuman, and people on the left regard people on the far right as subhuman. And therefore, you can't talk to somebody who's subhuman. And that inability to see the Tselem Elokim, which is what should frame our ability to relate to every human being. Every single human being is created at Tselem Elokim, including, by the way, those horrible people that stormed Capitol Hill. And we need to somehow or other as a society reflect more deeply about the shared humanity, which makes us all part of the human condition. And we need to somehow or other begin to respect people a little more, even if we vehemently disagree with them. And there's nobody around the Zoom table who thinks whether you voted for Trump or whether you voted for Biden who thinks that what happened there is acceptable. Everybody thinks it's absolutely reprehensible. And we need to do a little more thinking inwardly and reflection inwardly about what role we have played in that, and to what extent do we dehumanize people with whom we disagree, which has nothing to do with the vigor with which we hold our positions. We should hold our positions, think them through, and if we believe we're right, then hold them vigorously, but not dehumanize those with whom we disagree. And I think that dehumanization has contributed to the fracturing of American society, which has given rise to the unthinkable behavior that took place yesterday. There's a lot to talk about, and one could go into more detail about individual people's responsibility, and again, I'm not a lack thereof or whatever, and I don't want to go there at this particular moment because I want to get to my Dvar Torah. It's certainly something worthy of thinking about and discussing, but not for right now. But we should all be shaken by these events, as I think we all are. And we should do a little bit less pointing outwards and a little bit less thinking inwards about how we can, in our own small ways, make the United States of America and American society a place that is a more tolerant and not necessarily agree, but a more accepting society where nobody feels dehumanized. Because I do believe that the dehumanization that the left flings at the right and the right flings at the left created a cauldron of anger and intensity, which erupted inexcusably into violence, and those certainly in people in positions of power. We don't have that power. People in positions of power should certainly reflect more deeply about their role in the events that ensue. There's a lot to talk about, and I could go into much more detail, but I don't want to do that now. What I'd like to do is to get to my Dvar Torah on Parsha, which is my primary purpose tonight. But I felt that I couldn't not share with you at least some aspect of my, not all of my feelings. I have some very strong feelings about a lot of what took place, but I am only speaking about one aspect of my feelings. And on to the parsha. Some of the most enigmatic and in many ways troubling psukim in the Torah, to my mind, occur in this week's parsha. The background is that after much refusal on Moshe Rabbeinu's part, Hashem charges, and Moshe Rabbeinu finally agrees to take the leadership role in bringing Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Hashem provides Moshe Rabbeinu with three signs, osos, that will prove that he is their leader, and Hashem has come to take them out, take Bnei Yisrael out. Moshe starts traveling from Midian with his family to Mitzrayim. And on the way, after he started the journey, Hashem comes to him again and tells him that these osos are not only for Bnei Yisrael, but they are also to demonstrate to Paro that Hashem hu Elokim. Hashem tells Moshe that I will harden Paro's heart. It's going to take time, but eventually he will come to that realization. And then the following transpires. Vayehi baderech, Moshe was on the road, ba'malon, in an inn, vayifkishehu Hashem, and Hashem met him, vayivakesh hamiso, and he sought to kill him. Vatikach tzipora zor, Tzipora, his wife, takes a flint, vatichros es orlas bina, and she cuts off the foreskin of her son, vataga l'raglav, and she casts it to his feet, vatomer, and she says, ki chasan damim atali, for you are a bridegroom of blood to me. Vayiref mimenu, and so Hashem released him. Azamra, then she said, chasan damim lamulos, you are a bridegroom of blood for circumcision. Just a couple of psukim, which are very enigmatic and very disturbing. Like, there's no explanation the Torah provides for why Hashem would want to kill Moshe. This is like comes right out of the blue. There's no chet recorded, no sin recorded. Moshe is not reported to have done anything in particular that might warrant this behavior. So why does Hashem want to kill him? This comes after the reconciliation between Hashem and Moshe Rabbeinu. This is after everything worked out and Moshe Rabbeinu agreed and he's on his way. So this comes like a lightning bolt out of the blue. But the Torah wants to tell us that it's not out of the blue because the psukim begin with Vayehi Bamalo. There is the Vav HaChibur. That is, this immediately follows what happened before. So the Torah seems to indicate that there's some connection with the events I just described and summarized for you and this, but the connection is never made clear whatsoever. Also, the verb vayifkishehu is unusual. He met him. Like, what do you mean he met him? Hi, how are you, Moshe Rabbeinu? I'm going to kill you. Like, that's a bikisha. It's a meeting. Like, what is that supposed to mean? So these psukim are extremely puzzling. If you look at the Mefarshim, there are two basic approaches. I mean, there are a lot, but the two basic approaches that have come up over the years are number one, and this is probably the most common one, which is that Moshe deserved death because he did not circumcise his son. And the best evidence for that is that that's what Zipporah did. She circumcised their son Gershom. And that resulted in Moshe Rabbeinu's survival. So it certainly seems like the failure here was a failure in not giving his son a bris milah. But there are several questions that I think need to be raised about that explanation. First of all, if in fact Gershom should have had a bris milah, then you think Moshe Rabbeinu would have done it. In fact, he certainly knew the halakha of bris milah. I mean, he knew the tradition going back to Avraham, Yitzchak, the whole Jewish Mesorah. I mean, it's not like he wouldn't have known about it. And it's even less likely that Zipporah would have known about it, and not he. Zipporah grew up in Midian. She was, in fact, kind of a Giora, so to speak. You know, she wasn't raised within the Jewish community. Moshe Rabbeinu was raised in Beis Paro, but he was nursed by his mother. I mean, he knew something about, he knew he was Jewish. He went out to save his brother, you know, one of the Jews who was being smitten by the Egyptians. So he must have known about bris milah. So if Moshe Rabbeinu didn't give his son a bris milah, probably because he believed, as Mefarshim say, that it was a makom sakana. You know, it's a time of traveling, it's a sakana, not the time to give somebody a bris milah. But if that's the case, then why did she do it? And if it's a makom sakana, why would Hashem want her to have killed Moshe Rabbeinu? You know, the explanation doesn't carry enough punch, so to speak, to my mind anyway, to explain the enigma of the Parsha. Second approach is that of the Rashbam, a great Pashtun, who says that Moshe Rabbeinu's chet, and he says he did do something wrong, and his chet was that he slept his wife and baby on the journey from Midian to Mitzrayim. Now, anybody who's ever traveled with a family knows that it's not exactly a very quick expedition. Did you take the diapers? Did you take the formula? Did you take what happens if it needs 5 changes of diapers? You know, it's a whole geschäft. It takes a lot of time to get your whole family together, especially if it's a newborn and a wife who may have given birth, whatever. It's like not as simple. You can't go as fast with a baby. And so the Rashbam says that Moshe Rabbeinu's failure was that he didn't get to Mitzrayim post-haste. Here Hashem told him, go save Bnei Yisrael, and well, he's schlepping everybody along, the process is slow, who knows when he'll get there. And that delay in getting to Mitzrayim and beginning the process of Yitzias Mitzrayim is what Moshe Rabbeinu was culpable for. However, there are really 2 problems with this explanation, to my mind, by Nias Daiti, which is that, first of all, it says Moshe, you have to look at the Pesukim carefully, and here's the issue. It says Moshe Rabbeinu started the journey. Then it says that Hashem appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu and told him, no, this is a message not only for the Osim, the signs are a message not only, a proof, not only for Bnei Yisrael, but also for Paro. I will be hardening his heart, and just know it's going to take time. And then Moshe Rabbeinu continues on the journey. And then later, or shortly after that, this mysterious encounter with death transpires. Well, if Hashem was upset that Moshe Rabbeinu left with his family, then why didn't he do this before the revelation in the journey, during the journey? You know, he comes to Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, oh, it's for Paro too, everything seems copacetic, I have some more information for you, Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, I mean, if Hashem was really upset that he took the family with him, then he should have expressed that before his second revelation about the Os for Paro. So it just sort of doesn't seem to me to work as well as I would like. And of course, killing him also seems a pretty draconian measure. And finally, and maybe most importantly, to me, or at least by way of thinking about another approach, is that there's something so enigmatic about this encounter. There's something so mysterious about it. Like, none of these explanations, to my mind, adequately confront the raw sheer shocking enigma of this mysterious encounter in the inn. So I'd like to suggest an alternative reading of it for you to think about. And that alternative reading emerges from another question I have about the Parsha. Lots of questions, right? So this question goes to the end of the Parsha. The end of the Parsha is Moshe, as you know, intervenes, goes to Paro. He says, take Bnei Yisrael out, let them go out, let them worship Hashem. And immediately Paro says, nothing doing. He makes life worse for Bnei Yisrael. They now have to gather the Tevin and they have to do a lot of extra work. So Moshe Rabbeinu is fit to be tied, and he says to Hashem, Lama hari osa la'am hazeh. Why were did you make such difficulties for Bnei Yisrael? Why did you cause such harm to Bnei Yisrael? Now, I ask you the following question. Hashem had explicitly told Moshe Rabbeinu that he would harden Paro's heart. He had explicitly told Moshe Rabbeinu that this is going to take a long time. Now, what did Moshe Rabbeinu think? That Paro is going to roll over and say, oh, sure, no problem. Of course Paro is going to resist. Of course Paro is going to make life more miserable for Bnei Yisrael. Like, what was Moshe Rabbeinu thinking? Once Hashem had told him that he was going to harden Paro's heart, everything else follows in an psychologically and politically expected way. And so why is Moshe Rabbeinu now shrieking, Lama hari osa lama zeh? Like, what was he thinking? Of course that's going to happen. So various explanations have been offered. I have a compendium of Mefarshim. I was just checking it two hours ago, just to see. You know, a lot of different explanations have been offered. I came across an explanation, and I can't find it. I don't remember where I saw it. So you'll have to excuse me. One of the reasons I was looking around for it, I can't remember where I saw this, and I don't even know who said it. But in my mind, it opens up a whole new pathway into understanding our parsha. What this explanation, whoever authored it, suggests is that Moshe Rabbeinu knew full well that bad stuff would happen when he came to Paro. He knew that Paro would react negatively. He expected it. However, Moshe Rabbeinu was so passionately committed to the well-being of Klal Yisrael that emotionally he couldn't handle it. He loved every single Jew so much that when he saw Jews in more torment, he just burst out, Lama hare osa la'am hazeh Hashem, how could you do this? This was not Moshe Rabbeinu's reason speaking. He wasn't speaking out of rationality or logic. He was speaking out of his emotional, passionate love and commitment for every single Jew. Just like when Moshe Rabbeinu saw that mystery beat up that Jew, may not have been the smartest thing in the world for him to kill him. But Moshe Rabbeinu, as the leader of Klal Yisrael, had such love and passion and concern for every single Jew. Hashem, how could you do this? It wasn't his reason speaking. It was his love that he had for every single Jew. He couldn't bear the prolongation of Jewish suffering. Now, to my mind, one could argue that that in itself is surely a great virtue. Look at that. Moshe Rabbeinu loves Bnei Yisrael so much that he can't contain himself. Lama hariosa. However, as important and as powerful and as meaningful as that is, Hashem had a bigger, grander set of expectations for Moshe Rabbeinu. Surely a leader must love the people he leads or she leads. But Moshe Rabbeinu had a grander role in world and Jewish history. And that was to mediate Hashem's revelation of the Torah at Har Sinai, Torah which shaped the entire history of the Western world. It transformed first the Jews, then the Christians, the Muslims, all our children of Judaism, and Hashem's Torah radically transformed the way human beings lived and behaved and thought. For Bnei Yisrael, for Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu played a pivotal role in creating us as Am Yisrael. He mediated the Torah for us, and we today are heirs to what Moshe Rabbeinu has done. That is a cosmic task. It's a cosmic task, a transformative one for the entire universe. And that requires more than sheer love, as important as sheer love is. It requires a certain vision, and it requires, I would say, a cosmic toughness. You gotta be tough to make that happen. It means accepting Hashem as Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. That's how Hashem identifies himself to Moshe Rabbeinu in the Parsha. I am who I will be, who I will be. I am. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, need not understand what I want out of you. You have to accept that I have a vision for Klal Yisrael, for Jewish history, for the world, which you, Moshe Rabbeinu, as great as you are, can never fully understand. Nevertheless, it is your divinely ordained task to carry out as an obedient servant to Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. I am I. This is what I require of you. I know, Moshe Rabbeinu, that you love Klal Yisrael, and I am so proud of you and so happy that you love Klal Yisrael. But that is insufficient for you as the leader you must become. You need to become tough enough to accept what you may not understand, because I understand what I want to do, and you play a role in my grand vision. Moshe Rabbeinu, like all of us, are blind to the fullest consequences of events that swirl around us. Moshe Rabbeinu has infinitely more insight than we do. But Moshe Rabbeinu is not Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. It may be that Jewish pain is being caused by the prolongation of Jewish avdus in Mitzrayim. That is true. But Hashem had a grander aim in mind. The leading civilization of the ancient world was Egyptian at that time. That was the leading civilization of the world. Hashem wanted Paro and the Mitzrayim to realize that Hashem Hu Elokim, he is the one in charge of the world. The beginning of monotheism for them. And that is extraordinarily important. And if that's going to cost some Jews suffering, that's incredibly painful. And one wants to yell out in dismay, but one still must accept Hashem as Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh, who has a vision, a plan for the world, which we may not understand, which we may emotionally resist, but we need to be cosmically tough enough to accept and live by it. And that's what Hashem had to teach Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is the Vayehi Baderech. Right after Hashem says, I am going to harden Paro's heart, and I'm going to prolong Avdus and Mitzrayim. And I know, Moshe Rabbeinu, that you have a really hard time with that because you love every single Jew. Vayehi Baderech. And immediately following that revelation, Hashem tests Moshe Rabbeinu. And the test is precisely in the enigma. Remember I said that the most powerful and disturbing quality of these psukim is just the enigma. Like, what happened? by Yifkishehu. He met him. Hashem went to Moshe Rabbeinu and met him to teach him something. This wasn't a chet. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't sin. He didn't do anything wrong. In fact, Hashem saw in Moshe Rabbeinu the love that he had for Klal Yisrael, which would be articulated later. And because Hashem saw that love in Moshe Rabbeinu for Klal Yisrael, Hashem immediately afterwards said, I know I'm going to make life rough, and I got to teach you, Moshe Rabbeinu, how to handle that. Because I will be who I will be, and you must accept my cosmic plan for how events in the world unfold, even if you don't understand them, even if it costs you great pain to see the suffering of Klal Yisrael. It's precisely the enigma that defines the meaning of the experience. It's precisely because Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't understand it that Hashem was able to convey to him the whole point of the message, which is, you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you can understand everything. Who's to say you can understand everything? It's like Hashem told Eve, were you around when I made the world? Perek Lamed Ches. When I played around with the animals of the sea? Like, who are you? Fundamental to being a Jew is not only, like Moshe Rabbeinu, to love every Jew, but also to understand that Hashem has a mission, a goal, a cosmic purpose in what he does, and we must accept that in the enigma of the purpose without ever understanding. And there's this stuff we're not going to understand. We're just simply not going to understand it. As painful, as hard as that is, we're just not going to understand it. And that's the lesson, the enigma. The enigma is the lesson. The fact that it was mysterious. That there's no explanation. Moshe Rabbeinu, there's stuff that you're not going to understand, period. Because that's just, you need to accept the fact that there are mysteries in the world. In order for you to be an effective leader who will change the world, not only do you need love, but you need cosmic toughness to accept Hashem's often enigmatic to us cosmic plan for the universe. Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time with that. Tzipporah got it. Tzipporah understood that. She, living off by herself in Midian, knew about Moshe Rabbeinu's blinding love for Klal Yisrael. She knew about that. But what she knew is that sometimes blood is called for. Jewish blood. What could be more overpowering than the love of a parent for a child? A newborn child, just born 8 days old. And he goes under the knife. It's troubling. Parent loves a child. How can you submit a child to the knife of the mohel? But that is a core lesson at the heart of our Masorah, which is that there are times that love is overridden by divine will. That's a part of what makes us the Jews we are. That we can't always figure things out. Things don't always make sense to us. We may not understand exactly why we have to submit our male son to the knife of the mohel, and we love him so terribly. But that's what it means to be an Eved Hashem. That's what it means to follow Hashem's sometimes mysterious, enigmatic plan for the world. Parental love sometimes must be violated for Hashem's purpose. Tzipporah taught Moshe that. Tzipporah understood it. That's why she circumcised their son, to teach Moshe Rabbeinu, you love Gershom, I love Gershom, but love sometimes submits to blood. Requires sacrifice, which has been a part of Jewish history going back millennia. Tough lesson to learn. Tough lesson for us to learn. Very tough lesson for us to learn. And in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu did not fully absorb it. Because what happens? when he sees Bnei Yisrael in pain, he erupts. Lama harayosa la'amase. Moshe Rabbeinu was irreconcilably torn between his love of every Jew and his commitment to Hashem as Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh, whose goals, whose missions, sometimes inexplicable to us. And you know something? I'm okay with that. I'm okay with Moshe Rabbeinu never fully reconciling that tension. I'm okay with the fact that Moshe can't control his love for Klal Yisrael, as I am okay with Moshe at another level, fully understanding what Tzipora taught him, which is that Hashem is Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh. Nobody said it was easy to be a Jewish leader. Nobody said it was easy to be a Jew. That's one of the lessons I would suggest of the Parsha.